if we want those things for ourselves or for our children, what are we doing that actually makes this more likely or less likely? Hello and welcome to the Wild Minds podcast for people interested in health, nature-based therapy and learning. We explore cutting-edge approaches that help us improve our relationship with ourselves, others, and the natural world. My name is Marina Robb. I'm an author, entrepreneur, forest school, outdoor learning, and nature-based trainer and consultant, and pioneer in developing green programmes for the health service in the UK. You're listening to episode 26, Behaviour is Communication. In this episode, I'll be sharing the importance of knowing that our behaviours do not really reflect what's going on internally, and that most of the time we're not aware of how our unmet needs are fueling behaviours that we need support with, not punishment. As we get into this new season, I've been thinking a lot about punishment and rewards and how that plays out in our lives, whether that's within a school system, whether that's subtly within the relationships we might have, and generally even our own culture. And I've been noticing that it's really prevalent, more than I realised. As a practitioner and somebody that's worked with young people for 30 years, I've obviously delved into some of the structures and norms of how we are with children. And one of the things that I've been aware of is the idea of praising, you know, and how we praise children and what that actually might be doing to the young people, either the individual or the whole group when we do that. And I'm going to look at that a little bit today, but I'm also really interested in following last week's podcast with John to look at some of the threads that are prevalent in our society and culture. And of course, we are within what some people are calling this poly crisis. And one of those threads is the crisis of school attendance and anxiety and mental health, and obviously environmental crisis. And I think they're all linked. I think all of these things are linked in the way that we are within structures that we don't necessarily realise that we are within. And I am someone that has hope. So I always am aware that as I start to talk about crises, it starts to feel kind of impossible to solve. And the good news is that we don't have to solve it all or on our own, that these are little changes. And often as we change what's going on within ourselves, then the way we see the world changes and we see the opportunities and the possibilities. And there is hope within that. So there are a lot of young people out there within schools that are struggling. And we could say that their behaviours are showing a high level of distress. And we used to call it challenging behaviours. And we do call it challenging behaviours because they definitely challenge us. But I also want us out there to recognise that it isn't just the behaviours of young people. It's also our own behaviours, you know, the times that we know that our behaviour is reacting to something and we're not our best selves, because we are all in that. We don't always behave well. And obviously the same is happening for these young people. And I can hear the value judgments in behave well, good, behaving in an obedient, in a normal way, a way that's acceptable within the groups that we're within or within the structures that we're within, whether that's a school or in the workplace. So behaviours, in my field of work, we understand behaviours to be seen as a form of communication. So behaviours are, in effect, outward expressions, what we're seeing when we are either observing behaviours or in a relationship where certain behaviours are happening, they are expressions of feelings, thoughts, needs, and our intentions. So what we're actually seeing does not tell us what is going on within that person. Particularly when things feel more aggressive or rude or violent or so-called angry, what's underneath, what's motivating that behaviour is probably not what we are seeing on the surface. And that's really important. So sometimes I'm aware of what's going on inside me and why I'm behaving in the way I'm behaving. And sometimes I'm not aware. And, you know, it's taken years to be in a position to kind of excavate, if you like, and go within myself to figure out, oh, okay, that's what's going on. That's what I need. Because we are absolutely not brought up to be aware of our needs. And even if we knew what our needs were, we wouldn't necessarily value ourselves enough to think that we can even express them, or let alone believe for a moment that they may be met by that other person. So many of us are what we could say dissociated from our feelings because, and dissociated from our needs because we just would have tried and tried and tried as a younger person and would have learned pretty much early on that those behaviours which are underpinned by those needs are just not going to get met. So what are we doing about that in our society? What are we actually doing? Well, we really, really like to punish people when they step out of line, you know, from our prisons to our schools to our everyday relationships. And, you know, I sometimes think that punishing in relationships could be withdrawing your love, for example, so that you know, emotional punishing is, you know, that's going to hurt somebody if you do that. And then there's the obvious punishing, like shaming in front of people, or as little ones, getting them to be locked in a room or sat on a step, or all these things that we've done, you know, we've done it, we've got angry, we've reacted and we've punished. And we do it because, well, partly because we've got a strong set of emotions and feelings going on within us, and a release is to kind of express that. But we're also doing it because it's learned behaviour. We've learned that actually being in control and controlling others appears to work. Does it work? I mean, that's really one of the most important questions. And although I can't cite the research on the podcast, there's enormous research that shows that punishing and rewarding and praise that links to reward doesn't really work. What it does is it works on a superficial level. And yes, there's compliance for lots of reasons. A lot of that will be fear-based. But it doesn't work if we actually stop and think, what do we actually want our children to feel or to be or have a sense of as they're growing up, right? What are we trying to support in our young people? And how do we want our young people to turn out? And this is not obviously just our young people. This is us too. How do we want to turn out? What kind of people do we want to be? And what we can generally see that most people, when they're asked, how do you want your children to turn out? They actually want people to be happy. People talk about being happy, balanced. I think that's really interesting what we might attribute in terms of balance. People say they want their children to be self-reliant, thoughtful, responsible, independent, and so on. And you might have other words going on. as to what you want with your children. And then we have to kind of ask ourselves the question, well, if we want those things for ourselves or for our children, what are we doing that actually makes this more likely or less likely? So is it more likely that if we tell children, whether they're toddlers or whether they're within the school system, that if they don't do this or if they behave in this particular way, they're going to get punished? Or indeed, if they do this, they're going to get reward, the approval of the teacher, or a sense of the kind of approval that builds your so-called self-esteem. How long-term, how sustainable is that? Because if we're relying on an external person to decide whether we are intrinsically good enough, intrinsically have enough self-worth, then we're always relying on the external world to decide whether we're good enough and to determine our levels of confidence and self-esteem. What's interesting to me as a practitioner that also works a lot within health and safety and risk assessment by using, you know, tools outdoors or fires or knives and kind of using our hands, we use like this idea of risk benefit analysis. And I have been also thinking how a lot of these models can be discovered or explored, if you like, through a kind of lens of risk benefit analysis. Like, what is the cost to us when we are punished? You know, what is the benefit of that? And I'm going to let you wonder about that. What does punishment really teach us? This is a call out to all you educators and health practitioners. Are you ready to revolutionise your career with outdoor learning? Don't let your practice become stale. You could be depriving your students or clients of life-changing outdoor experiences. Envision a world of possibilities, masterclasses, 120 instructional videos, and year-long session plans, all accessible at theoutdoorteacher.com/certificate. Enhance your career and embark on an extraordinary learning journey today. And lastly, if you're based in the UK, why not immerse yourself in nature with one of my transformative trainings in the beautiful landscapes of Sussex? Discover more about our in-person courses at circleoflife-rediscovery.com. So normally, when we punish children, or we send them out of the classroom, or we shout at them, or we, you know, get angry that they haven't done their homework, or we, as I said, shame them, or we tell them that it's a stupid idea, or we, you know, respond really badly when they're expressing a feeling, usually it tells the child that the way they're feeling is absolutely not acceptable. And as I said, we don't really know what's going on underneath why they might be expressing that feeling. We don't actually know. One of the things we say when we're meeting a group for the first time, especially if a group has had a lot of difficulties, we bring to our mind that we absolutely don't know what that young person has had to deal with before they've just shown up. You know, whether they're dealing with potentially alcoholic parents, or violence, or the fact they've had to wash their clothes in order to arrive, or that they're really hungry. You know, all these things will have an impact on the behaviour we're seeing. And what we tend to do is then punish those young people rather than understanding that they actually need that relationship. So that will have an effect of also making us more and more angry, not actually allowing us to think clearly and get our needs met. And of course, when we get angry, we also can speak to ourselves really badly as well. So we can be very self-punishing, and we're much more likely to hurt others if if we've been given that experience. The other big thing that we need to think about is that we're modelling a particular use of power. And this is about power over and not about power with. And this is an area that I'm incredibly interested in as well, as how we use our power, this authority that we have within us. Do we use it to control people, to create pain, physical or emotional? How are we using that power? It really, the cost of that. So we're modelling ways of dominating people when we punish. And of course, then we step out and we start to see this within the structures that we're living within. A way of approaching conflict is by going to war, for example. Okay, so another thing that if you're punished by someone, you actually feel that they don't care about you at all. So this idea of building a relationship between you is eroded. And many of us will know that it's very, very hard to trust people who will say that it's good for you if I remove this from you, or if you do this, this is going to happen. Because actually, first of all, as I said right at the beginning, the behaviour that I might be exhibiting or somebody might be exhibiting probably has nothing to do with the need. Really, they might need to either be fed, or they might need just a space to feel safe, or an opportunity to go and create something on their own rather than write the sentence and do it in the right way of, you know, using the pen in a particular way. And if they don't do it, then they're doing it wrong, for example. Their needs might be completely different. So it kind of sets up this relationship that is very, very conditional. You will love me, you will treat me well if I do it your way. It also actually promotes self-interest. So we're all learning in this kind of domination rather than partnership way of working. We're learning that actually how to avoid punishment and how to please someone. So it's quite manipulative, and it's in our self-interest, because actually we don't want to feel or get the, you know, to receive that kind of anger. We don't want to have that. So we're going to actually learn to dodge it and not be present, you know. And that is actually quite a self-interested thing, rather than feeling actually I can stand true and have the ability to actually say this is wrong and actually want to help others. Now, I'm completely aware this is not possible when you're young, because you are at the mercy of the adults in your care. But of course, all these patterns play out later on as well. Another one we can think about is this leads into, you know, how we learn to be calculating, how we learn not to get caught. We learn to lie to protect ourselves. And remembering, going full circle back to how do we want to be in this world? How do we want to turn out? What kind of person do we want to be? It's really hard if we need to protect ourselves. And, you know, there are so many ways of looking at this. You know, people will be saying, but, you know, people must have consequences. And the thing is that consequences are very, very close to actually being quite threatening. If you do this, this is going to happen. We will make you suffer if you don't do what I say. So they are kind of part of the same package. And a lot of the ways through this is through a much more healthy relationship with yourself and with others. And if we're always aware or responding to external kind of motivations, from whether we're going to get a reward or whether we're going to get praise and that's going to help us feel better, then we do lose a sense of ourselves. And that has a lot of repercussions for what we end up feeling we're capable of in our life, and an ability to really look after ourselves. And that obviously has implications for our own mental health. So the wonderful Brené Brown talks about having a strong back, a soft front, and a wild heart. Absolutely love that, because what we definitely need to do is to develop a very grounded confidence, as she says, and boundaries. And boundaries are really being aware of what's okay for you and what's not okay for you. And that actually people are doing the best that they can within the situation that they find themselves in, because so much of this stuff is also unconscious, you know, not really being aware, as I said, of what we need. Even though we know universal needs are to be loved, to be able to find safety, to be able to be witnessed and looked at as though you have value, you have dignity, you belong. You know, these are basic needs. But a strong back is also to have that confidence and to take those risks. You know, I like talking about risks, but to be able to take the risks and to know that you can come through this. And, you know, I know that out there it is not safe for many people to take those risks, because they might be locked up or beaten up. The risks are really high, real risks. And even me as a white, middle-class white person can feel the fragility of certain behaviours and what that could happen. You know, you can get sectioned for certain behaviours and never be questioned as to what's going on underneath. So there is vulnerability there. So strong back, and this takes time, and those boundaries, what's okay for you and not okay for you. To be present in a group is to be able to name those things, to be human in that. The soft front is really trying to develop this ability to stay vulnerable and curious. And I've talked about that in other podcasts, and I'm absolutely still and will always continue to learn about that, because when I feel threatened, when children feel threatened, when we feel scared, we defend ourselves, we fight. Or we freeze, or we run. So to be able to be vulnerable, you have to be sufficiently resourced in the other areas of being whole, which I've been discussing throughout these podcasts with other people as well. And this lovely wild heart, you know, just really being in the heart place and being in a place that isn't domesticated, isn't limited by all these fears, if you like, and being in the paradox of who we are. Whilst on the one hand, we might feel this strength and this power and this ability to be present, but on the other hand, at the same time, we feel our vulnerability and holding these paradoxes. And we're going to be talking about that as well more in the podcasts to come, about these double binds that we find ourselves in. And the fact is that this tension is always there between parts of ourselves, and in a way, different parts of ourselves need attending to all the time. Talked a bit more about punishment than I have about rewards, but in a way, they're part of the same thing. They're the part of how we are coerced and conditioned into certain behaviours, when really we want to be working on this inner world, in our and attending to what's going on inside of ourselves, and that will help us thrive. And with that, I think I am going to end there, and I wish you well and see you next time. Join me next week for episode 27, when you'll meet Peter Owen Jones, an ecological thinker, an Anglican priest, and a presenter on award-winning TV documentaries for the BBC, including Extreme Pilgrim, Around the World in 80 Faiths, and How to Live a Simple Life. Look forward to seeing you all next week. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wild Minds podcast. If you enjoyed it and want to help support this podcast, please subscribe, share, and leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. Your review will help others find the show. To stay updated with the Wild Minds podcast and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can visit theoutdoorteacher.com or follow me on Facebook at The Outdoor Teacher UK and LinkedIn, Marina Robb. The music was written and performed by Jeff Robb. See you next week, same time, same place. Are you curious about the guitar music in my podcast? It's actually my husband, Jeff Robb. He's taking his woodland-inspired show, The Music of Trees, on tour in England and Wales this May, June and July. Get tickets at jeffrobb.com/shows.